and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning and welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM campus and community radio from the top of Burnaby Mountain, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Holkaminam and Squamish speaking people. I am Robin.
And I'm Hotaru.
Oh, I got you on the wrong microphone there, Hotura. Go again.
I'm Hotaru. Is that okay?
There we go.
Yeah.
And we are together in the studio for today's show. I have an interview to share with you that I recorded a couple of weeks back for an event that's happening next week. And then I think Hotura and I will have a little bit of a discussion about it, and we'll play some music as we do. So hopefully you can stay tuned for all of that. Before we get to our first song of the day, which we usually start off to just sort of land in place. It was reading week last week for you, Hotaru.
Yeah.
How was it? Do you feel refreshed and revitalized?
I was able to refresh myself between the study stay. Then I visited Toronto to see my friends who work in Toronto as a working holiday worker. Didn't have a plan to visit the traveled other place, but the many other international friends are traveling for other countries or other ports, so that's why I decided to travel to Toronto. I did enjoy the many attractions in Toronto, but it was unbelievably colder than Vancouver. Yeah. Then also the subway was more complicated than Vancouver's one. Yeah. But overall, it was a great trip for me. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I know I have a friend who lives just maybe an hour and a half outside of Toronto in a different city in Ontario. And I see her online every week. Mm-hmm. And I know that they've just been hammered with snow and cold, and she's buried up to her eyeballs in snow. So I know that it's been cold there.
Yeah, it could be very cold.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's great that you had a little getaway and to see another part of the country and visit some friends. That sounds really nice. And now you're back for the final semester, or the final part of this semester.
Yeah.
Where rubber tends to hit the road, as we say in English. It's like everything comes to a head and gets really busy.
I am very busy, but really meaningful for me.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to start off with a song that is kind of chill. This is an ambient electronic artist, Canadian, Holly Kenneth, with a track that is called What Carries Us from her album For Forever, here on Intravenous.
Equity and Media Society Vancouver, GEMS, is proud to celebrate two decades of championing women and gender diverse filmmakers. With 32 films from 9 countries, GEMFest 2025 showcases diverse stories and perspectives, including 23 Canadian films and 11 films by BC-based creators. The festival opens on Wednesday, March 5th, with a reception and the BC premiere screening of One Must Wash Eyes, Iranian-Canadian filmmaker Sepida Yadigar's feature directorial debut at the VIF Center. Sepida Yadigar joins me for a conversation about the film. Welcome. Let's begin with Cole's notes or a synopsis of One Must Wash Eyes, which is your directorial debut film, and maybe some of the themes that underpin the story.
One Must Wash Eyes follows Sahar, an ambitious Iranian international student in Vancouver whose academic success is overshadowed by her isolation and financial troubles. Sahar's time is divided between her homework, working at her uncle Ahmed's grocery store, and working and writing on her feminist blog post, and spending time with her best friend TNT, an 8-year-old rebellious graffiti artist. When the murder of Mahsa Amini happens, Sahar, like a lot of other Iranians, finds herself angry and hopeless. So she finds it compelling to join the protest against the Iranian government to show her anger against the state's violence. But that comes with a huge cost. She gets disowned by her family and flagged as a national threat. She faces the terrifying reality of losing her legal status in Canada as well. With no clear path forward, the entire movie, Sahar needs to find a way to survive. She makes a lot of decisions, good, bad. I can't judge her for that. And it's up to you if you want to do that. But and I think the underpinning themes in the movie are exile, resistance, and the struggle for autonomy in a world that offers little space for those who don't fit neatly into the borders.
Can you talk a little bit about what brought you to the story itself?
Yes, the story was born from the feeling of hope that lingers even as the bridges behind burn and the road ahead disappears into uncertainty. It was initially set in 2012 and deeply inspired by my own experiences. The script reflected the struggles of Iranian women fighting for autonomy. However, after the murder of Mahsa Amini and the uprising that followed, it became clear that the story needed to be about what's happening right now, not something happened 10 years ago. So I updated a couple of scenes in the script, and it was updated to 2022. It was a sad realization that nothing has changed in the past decade, and the same forces are still in power, and the same fights are being fought.
Yeah, that is quite a hopeless realization that in 10 years, things are just as mired in the past as ever.
100%. Not just a decade, but honestly, in the past 40 years since the Islamic Revolution. So,
On this particular show, Intravenous, we focus on exploring gender expression through an intersectional feminist lens. What does the film One Must Wash Eyes offer us in terms of understanding gender, gender roles, and the binary of masculine and feminine?
It's in its core, the film challenges the traditional gender roles by showing how societal expectations limit and control women inside of Iran or outside. Sahar refuses to conform by writing on her blog post and pushing back against these rigid laws, but her defiance comes at a cost. Her voice and her body gets policed, and her struggles quickly turns from something personal into a political issue. And the film also explores the role men play in these structures. Figures like Uncle Hikmat and Ahmad are not direct forces of oppression, yet they enforce these ideologies and rules out of fear, self-preservation, or just the social conditioning. And then we have TNT, a rebellious little girl who is showing us that we don't have to fit into a box and we can be and do whatever we want to do. And it's a reminder that these gender biases are learned, not inherent. Speaking of biases, after one of our screenings in the summer, during a Q&A, one of our audiences, a man, questioned Sahar's morality, implying that her choices tainted her integrity. And it was fascinating because if it was a male protagonist making the same choices, he would be thought as resourceful or heroic. But obviously we judge women differently. And I think the film wants to challenge these double standards, presenting Sahar as a fully realized, flawed, and complex woman who has to make difficult choices in her life.
I was able to watch the film last week, and she does have to make very complicated choices in the film, and their choices, I'm not sure, like if I put myself in her shoes, I'm not sure I would have made different choices, or not. It's really hard to say. And likewise with the other characters, I think in the story, as you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of complex reasoning that everybody is playing into and feeding into based on experience and inexperience, depending on the side of the fence they're on.
Yes, 100%. That's just life. It's a life we live in. And absolutely, would I do everything that Sahar did in the story? Maybe, maybe not. But I'm not in her shoes. It's just for us to observe. And it's based on what we want to think of her.
Iran itself has quite a long-standing and significant history of women-led social movements. Maybe our audience isn't that familiar with what that means or what that is. Can you provide a little context on how that history influenced the Women Life Freedom movement that's identified in your film?
Iranian women have been resisting these oppressive rules, gender bias rules, for more than a century. I think it all started in 1905 to like 1911. It was called the Constitutional Revolution, when the women were at the forefront of political protests. They created an underground network, and also they launched the first ever female journals. And then in 1930s and 40s, they pushed more for voting rights and education. And then there was another revolution in 1963. I think it was called the White Revolution, when Shah granted voting rights to women and also granted like more protection, legal protection, and that allowed more participation in the workforce from women, which obviously all of those kind of got rolled back after 1979, the Islamic Revolution. And since then, it has been a fight every day, every year. And there have been so many that I don't want to name all of them, but the Woman Life Freedom Movement initially got ignited because of the murder of Mahsa Jina Amini in 2022 because of compulsory hijab. It started because of a pushback. We wanted a pushback against the compulsory hijab, but it quickly turned into more than that. It became a fight for basic human rights and fighting against oppression. And the cool thing about this movement is that it was decentralized and it was led by ordinary women, mothers, students, teachers, artists, workers, and anybody who refused to be silenced basically against the state's violence. And my film, One Must Watch Eyes, was inspired by this movement. And Sahar's character was inspired by people like Nargis Mohammadi, Pakhshan Azizi, and Bahar Hedayat, who keep fighting even though they're in prison.
Yeah, thank you. Some of the surrounding rhetoric around One Must Wash Eyes demonstrates that what's happening in Iran is a Canadian story with real world implications right here in Vancouver. And it's been praised for its ability to illustrate the far-reaching impacts of seemingly small actions. What are some specific correlations you can draw our attention to? How does us examining the microcosm of Vancouver provide a glimpse to the international stage?
The film wants to highlight that oppression doesn't end at borders. Even in places like Vancouver, which is a safe haven for a lot of people, with the large Persian community and international student, systemic struggles persist. The film highlights how Iranian women's struggles don't leave them when they leave the country. They just evolve. They turn into financial instability or bureaucratic struggles or the fear of losing everything at any moment. The film explores what the script was originally called, the education triangle. And it's that idea that in order to have a good job, you need to have a good education. And in order to have a good education, you need to have money. And in order to have money, you need to have job. And for Sahar and a lot of students, survival isn't about ambition. It's about navigating the system that ties opportunity to financial stability and making every choice a matter of survival. At the same time, small acts like writing a feminist article or joining a protest looks different depending on who you are and where you come from. And for somebody who is from Vancouver, for example, that could mean maybe a little bit of social backlash. But for Sahar, it means exile, surveillance, and threat to her family. By focusing on her life in Vancouver, One Must Wash Eyes reveals how personal survival, economic struggles, and political resistance are deeply connected, both locally and globally.
Appreciate that connection that you made there. You know, that our personal security and resistance are connected.
Absolutely. If you can't have one without the other, and usually the political resistance comes from the economic struggles.
Yeah. You touched upon this in an earlier question, and that is that One Must Wash Eyes mirrors a story that is very personal to you. How has making this film shifted your understanding or perspective on womanhood, life, and freedom? And what words of wisdom maybe do you have for others who are engaged in the struggle for liberty?
Well, I don't have any word of wisdom. I don't find myself in a position to have a word of wisdom. But what I could tell people who are in the fight for liberty, that they're not alone, even in the darkest nights when they think nobody can hear them, they should know that their voice carries. And we all fight in different ways. Sometimes we use our voices, sometimes we use our art, and sometimes by just being ourselves and existing, that's a form of resistance and fighting back in a world that tries to erase us every single day. And the fight for freedom is long, exhausting, and unfair. So as long as we keep talking and not getting silenced, you're making a difference. And what I think about freedom, I used to think you either have freedom or you don't have it. But I come to realize that for women, for most women, freedom is something that we need to negotiate every single day with a small act. For example, for Sahar, it's in quiet moments when she's working on her articles while smoking a cigarette, or when she is taping smiley faces onto different objects in the house, mimicking TNT's graffitis, maybe trying to preserve a little bit of the childhood innocence in a world that tries to like take that away from her. Or the moment she walks into the pool with Matt, something that's forbidden in Iran. Those small acts, even though they might seem small, they are a form of freedom and resisting the stories that have been imposed on us.
Again, I love the reminder that not everybody resists in the same way. Because I think sometimes we feel like if we don't go to the protest or we're not standing up and being, you know, publicly joined arms, we're not in solidarity, but there's lots of different ways that we can be vocal about the things that are, you know, against our morals or values or belief system that are equally potent. And sometimes it's a conversation with a friend over coffee.
100%. Judge ourselves and the people around us constantly because they're not fighting the same way. They're not fighting the same way we are fighting. And that's just not fair. We all do the fight in our own ways, and we need to be allowed to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it becomes more powerful, actually.
100%.
So much of what we think about ourselves stems from cultural influences, and those cultural influences worldwide are very commonly based on a male cisgendered mythos. How do you see the ways your film seeks to interrupt this or reframe outdated notions of who we are and who we can be?
I answered this a little bit, but going back to it, I would say the movie challenges these norms by centering the story on a woman who refuses to fit into a prescribed norms. Sahar is not a saint or a symbol. She is a woman navigating challenging circumstances and doing her best to survive through activism, defiance, small moments of joy, whatever that could be for her. She's like trying constantly to take over autonomy of her life. And she fights back about, she fights back the society about what it is expected of her. And then it also, the film also questions masculinity by not through obvious villains, but through men like Uncle Hikmet and Ahmed, who act and uphold these ideas because of fear. And then we have TNT, who is the hope for the future and a reminder that we don't have to follow this story that we've been told many times. We can be whoever, and we can do whatever we want to do with ourselves and life.
I have to say, TNT is just a delightful little character in the movie.
I know, I love him so much. Yeah. Also, our amazing Julianne.